Thank you for listening to an audio recording from the Midwest Genealogy Center's Tell Me a Story program, an initiative dedicated to preserving America's history through the timeless practice of oral storytelling. To learn more about the Tell Me a Story program, including how you can add your own story to the collection, visit MidwestGenealogyCenter.org/tellmeastory. On behalf of the Midwest Genealogy Center and Mid-Continent Public Library, we hope you enjoy the following story.
Hello, my name is Andrew McKinley, and I'm the web content creator at Mid-Continent Public Library, and today is March 26, 2019. And today I'm talking with Don Bridgeforth, who was recently the Human Resources Director here at Mid-Continent Public Library and has just recently retired. So welcome, Don. How are you?
I'm great, thank you.
Awesome. So can you tell me to start, when did you come to work at Mid-Continent Public Library?
October 6th, I believe, of 2000, October 11th of 2006, I get that right.
So 13 years ago.
It's getting close, yeah.
Okay,
12 and a half years.
Yeah. Did you come from another HR position?
Yes, I had retired, semi-retired, at about age 62, and found that retirement didn't really work for me, so I ended up back in the workforce. I had been in HR for a little over 30 years, so I had quite a bit of HR background. The library was looking for somebody in the HR department. My wife was beginning to notice that I wasn't taking well to retirement, so she pointed out the ad to me, and I applied.
Now, where, I guess in 2006, what kind of ad would you have seen at that time?
Well, I believe that I was one of the first, I don't know whether I was second, third, fourth, or fifth, of employees hired off of the then new online application process. My wife had seen it on the website, which she visited for other reasons. So I was one of the initial folks to take advantage of the new electronic.
And so since you were in HR and have dealt with all of the application processes throughout the last decade, how was that first application process we had, I mean, compared with what we do now?
The first system, when I got here and looked at it from both sides, looking at it from an applicant side, it seemed pretty standard for the day from what I'd seen in my career. It'd been 17 years in my last job since I'd actually had to put in an application myself. So I always looked at it from the employment side. So I think it was pretty standard for the day. It had a few strange side effects that we decided to change after I got here.
And since you were the first in that department, who did the actual hiring process and interviewing process with you?
Well, I want to clarify for historical purposes, I was really not. I don't consider myself the first, even though Dick Wilding, the director at the time, and Steve Potter, who was assistant director at the time, they say I was the first, but Jennifer, at the time, Reederer, now Jennifer Ridley, who is the new director, by the way, she had been carrying on the at least administrative functions of HR, and I believe probably a little more than that. Steve Potter, as the business manager, had carried that. He didn't have HR in his title, but he carried the function. So it wasn't quite like I walked in the door and it was the first time anybody had done HR. So I consider that I joined the existing team of at least Jennifer, and Steve was extremely helpful, as was Dick Wilding.
Okay. I mean, I just have heard various stories of when, I guess, the business manager was HR, marketing, and
finance.
A few other departments, and they were just sort of, so you were the first, was it, what was the actual position name you took?
At the time, what did we call it? I think it was human resource manager when I first came, and then somebody decided we needed to level out at some level, and director became the title. I don't know, there's a lot of difference in the mm-hmm. two, but...
Okay, so at the time, Dick Wilding was the library director, and Steve Potter, you said, was the business manager.
Correct.
So did you work directly with Steve, or did you and Jennifer at that point sort of go off on your own and create your own separate department?
Well, I suppose... none of this was real formal, but yeah, we probably had our own department. I did report to Dick Wilding as director, but Steve, having done most of the functions that I picked up, I certainly learned a lot, and I considered Steve, Dick, all the other managers, most of the employees at the library to be my bosses. So I worked for the library, I worked for the library district is kind of the way I always looked at it. But yeah, I suppose Jennifer and I kind of set ourselves up as the HR department.
And when you came in, since it was a new position, what was it like? Because you said Jennifer and Steve were doing a lot of the functions. What was it like creating that new position?
Well, I looked at it as a distributive model of HR work, and by that I mean that the managers here at the library were doing a lot of the functions that the branch and the department managers, mm-hmm. Anybody who supervised people, they were doing a lot of the HR work, where in a larger organization with a larger HR department would have provided a lot of services, and are beginning to now. The HR department is now 4 people as opposed to 2, so over 12 years, we doubled size. So they're able to do more for managers that they don't necessarily have to do for themselves. I'm not sure they all have noticed that, but I think is what's happened. So I call it a distributive model. People would ask me, we had over 1,000 employees when I came. Mm-hmm. And so some of my former colleagues and peers would say, oh, 1,000 employees, boy, how big a HR department do you have? Well, there's 2 of us. And they were kind of astounded. And I never really kind of noticed it because 2/3 of our employees are part-time employees who are not eligible for benefits. And that has its own challenges, but it does cut down on the amount of paperwork that Jennifer would have to do to administer benefits. So that was one thing that was kind of scaled back a little bit. Now, I don't know that Jennifer would appreciate me downplaying the remaining 300 and some.
Yeah, I mean, I know she's worked very hard.
Very manual. Yeah. And so, yeah, Jennifer's extremely hard worker, very bright individual, and I would have not survived without her. So... I got to give her all the credit in the world for keeping me employed. Probably wouldn't still have been here 12 years later if it hadn't been for Jennifer. There were 2 big things I was hired to do initially. The board had decided that they wanted to do away with the old step and grade system where your raises every year were just dependent on your grade,
there.
Your job grade, mm-hmm. and how long you'd been here. It was a real simple formula. Mm-hmm. You didn't have to worry too much. There was no performance management, no measurement of performance. Hopefully there were some discussions about it, but there was no formalized or even near formalized performance management. So that was the first challenge, to transition away from those 2 thoughts. And it was a challenge.
Yeah, I can imagine those would be awfully big challenges.
It was. And as a diversion, I started asking why our employees wore name badges that were blank. They had Mid-Continent Public Library and forgot whether it even had employee on there, but it was a badge. Mm-hmm. And so people could identify that they probably worked at the library, but there was no name on them. And I thought that was kind of strange. So that was probably one of the more controversial things I tackled.
The name tags.
Initially was I started asking, well, why don't we have people actually put their names on there? And so that created some stir. Mm-hmm. But between those 3 processes mm-hmm. that we put in place, the first couple of years were probably more challenging than I would have imagined going to work for a public library.
Yeah. I mean, I guess were there major pushbacks? I mean, I know the idea of taking away that you automatically get a raise every year. I mean, I can't say like a mass departure of employees, but was there not quite an uprising, but were there, I mean, how much did they push back?
You know, Andrew, I'm not sure pushback is the way I would look at it. It was a huge cultural change. And of course, I didn't witness what was going on before, and I was rather astounded when I got here and saw how the system worked, because I'd never seen a pure tenure-based pay system. And so I had to absorb that in the first place, so I could appreciate how that looked to people. I had quite a few people tell me that they were getting close to retirement, so they thought they'd go ahead and retire and not put up with all this nonsense.
That tends to happen with every
right.
every major change at the library.
Right. And there had been quite a few changes that had gone on just before I got here. So this was kind of a continuation and maybe an acceleration. Kind of hard for me to judge if that's an accurate way to put it, but it appeared from the way people were reacting. I would say no rebellion, mostly just a lot of questioning, a lot of uncertainty. I suppose some people were pretty aggravated about it, but you know, I think the employees who did a good job and the ones I kind of call the rock of any organization. I think they dealt with it pretty well. There were employees who felt that they'd never been properly recognized, because didn't matter how hard they worked, at the end of the year, it was, if you were here this long and hadn't gotten too much trouble, then you got this raise.
I've been on that side of the fence.
Right, and I think a lot of people have, even in a less structured environment like that, even a more performance-based, a lot of times that's kind of the way it works out. Mm-hmm. So I think those people appreciated that there was being some distinction made between them and somebody who perhaps didn't make it to work every morning on time, or you know, maybe their performance wasn't what we would hope it to be. So I don't know. There wasn't a rebellion. Several of the people had told me that they were going to go ahead and retire. I just would say to them, well, you know, you haven't been hurt yet, right? Well, no. And well, then why don't you wait? If it gets too painful, then by all means, you can retire anytime. But if you're not wanting to retire and you're just doing it because you think you're being forced to do it, then hang on. We'll see what happens. And I think several people took me up on that.
Did you have a lot of direct interaction with either the branch manager or even the lower level staff who might have complaints? I mean, I know we do now and then a big email blast form of feedback, but how did you guys handle feedback in 2006 in that time period?
Well, when we first started it, we got a committee together and probably made a mistake by only having managers in it, quite a few branch managers, because that's where the bulk of the employees at the library work. I'm not sure we got as much representation from employees at the frontline employees, perhaps, although along the way we had several different approaches. But we did a lot of employee meetings. We'd go out and attend staff meetings, try to talk to staff and let them ask questions. At least I did when I would go out. Try to be honest with them about what we're trying to accomplish. Try to explain what the new system might look like, why we were doing it, why the board felt it was necessary, my own personal thoughts on what harm or lack of harm might come to people. I think a lot more contact and I was out and about a lot more than I was the last few years. And that was one thing I always, every year I put on my wish list to be out and about more, and every year I failed miserably at doing that to the way I would like. But I think generally we tried to get out and about, talk to people about what was going on before it actually happened.
Well, that's something I've done in my department, is go out there so they know who you guys are, because otherwise it creates that sort of us versus them mentality, which I've talked a little bit about with a few people. Is that something you ever saw between sort of branch employees and headquarters employees?
Absolutely. Steve Potter, Dick Wilding, a number of people have talked about the silos that we have and maybe still have a little bit here at the library. And I think that's true of any organization where you've got a headquarters and you've got a lot of dispersed branch operations. Sometimes it's over several blocks, other times counties, other times states. I've worked for where it was over countries. So the further you get from headquarters, the more there's a them and us, I think, kind of thinking. Mm-hmm. And that certainly was in full play. One of the things at the time that was talked about a lot was that the library was still transitioning from being 31 or whatever it was, 29, whatever the number was back in those days, high 20s, libraries with a common administrative point, ordering, book processing, that type thing, to one library with serving all three counties. Mm-hmm. So that transition was part of the cultural change that people were going through and had been for quite a while, as I understand it. Given the way the library grew by kind of a, I guess if you were in the private sector, you would call it acquisitions, as different groups came on board to the library district. So yeah, there was a definite them and us, and people didn't mind speaking their mind when I went out and they talked about people at headquarters, and respectfully, but yeah, there was always a suspicion. Trust was a big discussion as to lack of trust of what we were trying to do from here at headquarters. And I think that covered the library-specific jobs, those of us who are here just to serve other folks, like accounting and marketing, HR. We all came under a certain amount of suspicion as to what we were going to be sitting here thinking about doing to people.
Now, I know from another side of the library, like the progression of our technology and things like that, because we're getting workflows and ebooks and all of that. From an HR side, what was, I guess, after you started in 06, the first major initiative? Because you said you got the, we adjusted the pay levels every year. What after that would have been the next major shift or push that came from the HR department? I mean,
well, we changed, I think we're working on our third applicant application system.
Newton Software, like that's the current?
Newton, we went through Ceridian, and we had a, when I first got here, the product was, and I'm trying to think, it was a, what the heck was it? You know, I can't remember what it was. It was a brand name that probably everybody would recognize, but I can't come up with it. But yeah, it's Newton is our third. And we got Newton because the accounting system went to Paycor. And Paycor then also provides a well, fairly integrated, and they're getting better at it all the time through Jennifer's efforts, HR payroll system. And then Newton was a system that they kind of added on to that, so it made sense to use that because you can pass the data through. So yes, it was a technology advance. Not as advanced when we first went into it in 2014, but they've upgraded, and I think probably the last changes that, in fact, Jennifer's still working on some, fulfill the promise they made back in 14.
Now, could people in 2006 still use paper applications?
That was an interesting challenge. When I first got here, we were trying to get people to do it online. We still had people that felt like they couldn't use a computer. Some of our jobs, the drivers, custodians, you wouldn't have thought necessarily would require computer skills. And so I had a few calls, usually from wives, because it was usually men trying to apply for those jobs. And they were concerned that their husband couldn't apply for a job because we made them use a computer and they didn't know how to use the computer. So I started, we had some old paper applications around, so I would send them a paper application and explain to them that it's not going to fit well into an automated system, but certainly try to give them a fair chance. But then one day it dawned on me that those people needed to use the computer to some extent when they got here, because they had to use it for the timekeeping. The custodians had to order supplies. Drivers had some things. I can't recall exactly what they had to do. So, you know, begin to realize, well, they got to be able to do something. So I quit doing that. And what I suggested one day, the first time I kind of put my foot down, the lady I was talking to, I said, well, you know, you guys visit the library, I'll bet. And sure, they do. They use their local branch. And I said, okay. And do you have grandchildren? Because she'd kind of given me her husband had kind of retired from one job, so I knew they were probably older, so I wasn't insulting her. And she said, yeah, we do. I said, well, I will bet you one of those grandchildren could take your husband to one of our branches where they have computers and could walk your husband through the application process. And she was kind of quiet for a minute, and I thought she was going to give me pushback, but she said, well, of course. And so that became my standard answer, and I think that may have been the last. In fact, that was just prior to that, the last paper application we gave out.
So I guess what year was our last paper application then? About?
Oh, probably late 2007, maybe. Oh. I would guess somewhere in 2007 after okay. I'd been here a few months.
Before I got here. So I must have applied online.
You probably
I don't remember.
Did.
I came in 2008.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, yeah. If you came in 8, I doubt that we would have. What little I know about you, Andrew, mm-hmm. I'm guessing you would have been
I would have
conversant.
Used the computer.
You would have used
way.
The computer, yeah. Given the choice, you would have used the computer.
So you and Jennifer just worked side by side without anybody else in your department for, I guess, maybe 8 years before you guys expanded for the first time?
Yeah, it was probably 4 or 5 years ago. The we had some issues, kind of the negative side of things. We had some employee relations issues that required more handling and more attention than we were able to give them. Mm-hmm. And due to kind of having to keep a lot of plates spinning, we had one that kind of went south on us, and it worked its way out, but the board agreed, Steve proposed, and we added a position. So there were three of us, and then that position we added, the person we hired was really super good, and she had lots of skills, and she got hired away from us after about a year.
Think. Was that Trish? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We still have a video of Trish that I think the new employees have to watch.
Okay. Yeah, probably.
Soft skills.
Yeah.
Was her.
Trisha
video.
Brought a lot of different experiences. She was kind of a non-traditional HR hire. But her husband was likely to get transferred, and she got offered a job that would allow her to work from home. So she liked the library, and we liked her, but she needed to move on.
And what was, I guess, what was that first new position that was
created?
Well,
we talked about doing two, but I thought that was a little overkill to go from two to four. And I was a little reluctant because that was a time when the branches were being asked to keep the brakes on when people would leave. So that was awkward.
Yeah.
And so Steve talked about two, and I said, well, maybe we combine two things, employment and employee relations. And those are two positions that are usually kind of standard in an HR department. But in a smaller department, a lot of times they're combined, kind of the hiring process and then the dealing with the problems that come up after you hire people. It's kind of nice to have them separated, but you can put them together. So that's what Trisha was doing. So when she left, we had an opportunity we interviewed for one position, but we had two super really good people. Mm-hmm. And I went back to the well, and Steve agreed, and we hired both, and we created the two positions, employment specialist and employee relations specialist.
Okay, and at the time, that was Dion and Anthony.
Right.
Okay. And so how did those two positions, once they got separated, what did they do?
Well, basically, with employment, we really had Anthony out in the community getting the library's name out there with organizations that might help us find...
I don't think I was even aware of that.
Anthony was a minority, and that was a bit of unusual in itself. And he could get into doors. He was much younger than me. I was charged with being the library's diversity officer. And the library, as most libraries have, has struggled with diversity. And so we wanted Anthony, we felt the best use of Anthony would be to have him focus outside the organization to get us indoors where we wouldn't have been in order to recruit and to get interest from minority communities in employment at the library. But we didn't spend as much time focusing on managing the actual mechanics of the employment process. And so we kind of threw a lot of that back to the managers again, where attrition picked up some of it. And so we were trying to walk that tightrope, and we kind of overkill perhaps on the exterior part of his job. So that all kind of led to some changes that we've made just in recent months. The other side of that, the employee relations, Dion, she's uniquely qualified. She's a non-traditional HR background. She's been a call center manager. She's dealt with a lot of people. She's done a lot of people stuff from the managers, the business end of things. She didn't come out of school with an HR degree and no management experience. I think that's really important that people who work in HR be able to relate well to managers and the general staff. But so she really dug in. And one thing we didn't count on, but she brought, was a real passion for employment, I call them feel-good programs. And HR had been a little bit involved, but mostly there were committees of employees who mostly got themselves together to do a program of some sort. And they really didn't have a real general tie-in. And they, a lot of organizations, they would have been at least an HR representative. And I used to attend a meeting or two, but I just didn't have the time to put to it. Dion did make the time, and she's pulled a lot of that together. We still have the committees, still a lot of people doing the work, no doubt about it. But Dion's kind of began to be the focus point, and we can kind of bring it all under one budget, and she can kind of oversee it. So that was one cool thing. And then she's a great documenter, which is great for somebody doing what she does. Yeah, that was a great skill. And she is really, really good with people. And she's got a really good, she can be firm, but she's also very compassionate. She's got excellent instincts, in my opinion. So got a lot of mileage out of those two hires.
And you mentioned one other thing, that you said you were on a diversity inclusion committee. Was that started by HR, or was that started, or were you, I guess, put on that committee by Steve?
Well, when I got here, well, one of the things when I first came to work, shortly after I got here, I don't remember exactly when, but the board was concerned about the library's lack of progress in diversity. And so I did probably spend quite a bit of time trying to do that. And we did put together a committee, and I'm not sure I went about it as well as I should have. I got most of the diverse people that worked at the library at the time, and we had a committee of about 12. And I'm kind of laughing because at least a couple of those people pointed out to me that, you know, we might have wanted a little bit more Caucasian influence in that committee, because you know, it kind of looked strange, I suppose. And it did give me a lot of pause to think about diversity and some of the things I did learn from the people. And we talked about it and talked about it and talked about it. We came up with a lot of great ideas, but it kind of, it just meandered. And we can't, maybe got too far afield. We got into diversity in collection development, diversity in programming, diversity in HR, diversity in, you know, I think we used the classic shotgun approach and couldn't really focus on much of anything. So it kind of floundered, although I think it we brought some speakers in, and I think we began to move the needle a little bit, as Steve would say, to get people to thinking about diversity when we go through the hiring process. That the committee kind of dissolved. And then when Anthony came aboard, there were some folks that were anxious to get that going again, and Anthony was in a position, I kind of anointed him as our diversity officer, and so he kind of worked with the some folks. And again, it was kind of a grassroots type thing, and then Anthony got involved. So I really never was an official member of that committee. Anthony was, and now Katie works with it. Katie Gregory has replaced Anthony, and she came from, as you know, from a branch manager role.
And so I guess in the beginning, was the library measuring diversity? Did we have lists of here's, you know, I guess the ethnic makeup of the library, or do we do that now? How does, how, I mean, it's sort of a thing where how do you measure, you know, How do you measure that?
Unfortunately, at the time, it wasn't that hard to pick out diversity.
Yes.
But most of it's self-reporting.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people who, if they didn't self-report, you'd never know what their diversity is.
Mm-hmm.
And we're obviously talking about the classic things.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly skin color is a big issue. There are other diversity issues, but that's the one that's noticeable when somebody walks into a branch. Religion's not as obvious. Disabilities may or may not be as obvious. So there's a lot of diversity that we wanted to address. And that was another thing that we, employment was the most obvious issue. And that's the one that our race is the most obvious, gender. If there's an investigation or a complaint, that's what they look at because there's a lot of statistics you can gather. The rest of it is all pretty squishy. So it was a tough thing to get hands around. And my feeling is the library, one of our biggest handicaps in dealing with diversity is the fact that most of our managers of any level need a master's in library science degree. And there are not a lot of diverse students in those schools, at least the ones around here. And that really creates an interesting roadblock, in my opinion, to solving the diversity problem. And I from what I've gathered, libraries are not something a lot of the minority communities, their cultural backgrounds do not lend themselves to thinking about the library. And so that's the challenge that the programming people, collection development, all the folks dealing with all the library issues, that's one of their challenges, is bringing in those customers who are probably paying taxes, they're paying for the service, they just aren't accustomed to using it. And so it's kind of the same thing with employment. Those same people don't think about the library as a place to work.
How do you feel, as somebody who came from a non-library background, the library culture when you got here in 06 versus how it is now in 2019, I guess, how do you see the library culture from your perspective? Our library culture.
Well, Steve would talk to me about relevant, being relevant, remaining relevant. And so that stuck with me from one of the first conversations I had with him, is the library, libraries in general, and this library in particular, needs to remain relevant in order to survive as an integral part of the community. I think the change I've seen is certainly Dick Wilding made a transition from the prior director to some things the board wanted to see done a little bit differently. I think hiring a marketing manager, someone to focus on finance, and then HR, and kind of breaking that old business manager job down into its components and actually hiring individuals, I will stick my neck out here and say experts, to do those jobs was a big change, a move in the right direction, I think, to bring a library into a... And I hesitate to say this because one of the things I was accused of when I came here was trying to turn the library into corporate America. But there were certain management issues and skills, I think, that that there's a commonality between the private sector and the public sector in some areas. Now, I also learned there's great differences and good ones. The public sector, the library in particular, has a mission. It's mission-driven. People work here because they love working for the library. They love the public service. They love the mission of the library. And that's something that I never really saw in the private sector. There were people that had a passion for banking. People had a passion for technology in the communications world. Passion for agriculture when I worked in agriculture. But a lot of people, especially here in the city, they were jobs. You can, and HR is a good example. You can do HR work in almost any organization. So the passion of our employees was really stood out. And the changes that have that Steve and Dick and Steve and the board have brought to the diverse approach that the library has to the public, to our customers.
And are there any other stories that you think might be fun to record from your time here? Anything that stands out as that was the funniest thing that happened while I was here?
I think there are so many things. I really enjoy my time at the library. In all fairness, I have really enjoyed almost every place I've worked. Mm-hmm. I've always worked with really good people. Some can be a little more trying than others. One job I worked, I had five ladies reported to me, and individually they were all super workers. They knew their jobs. They were great people. I enjoyed each one of them individually, but as a group dynamic, it was horrible. It was drudgery to come to work. And I left that job and got myself into a different situation. It wasn't because I didn't like any of them individually, but I just told them one day, I said, look, as a group, you suck. I couldn't figure out any other way to put it. I don't know what the dynamic was between them. Never did quite figure it out. But I've always been blessed with great bosses. I came to the library. The biggest surprise I had was that the employment posting didn't really specify exactly that this was going to be supposedly the head of HR. I didn't look at it that way. I looked at it as Jennifer and I were partners, but nonetheless, that's what, you know, one day during the first interview I had, somewhere in there I began to get the idea, wait a minute, I'm not like the third person in the department. Well, no, we're starting a new HR department. Mm-hmm. And so that was a bit of a surprise. Mm-hmm. When I came. It took me a few weeks, maybe a short number of months to adjust to library people. they are unique. Mm-hmm. And I say that with all respect. And I have learned to love library people. I have loved the people I've worked with. I've been blessed. I just can't think of any one thing. That really stands out. It's just been a great second career. I kind of retired from banking and wasn't ready to retire. Mm-hmm. And I came here, and it's just been a fantastic opportunity.
Okay. Well, if retirement still doesn't suit you, they're doing HR interviews on the other side of the building.
Oh, okay. Jennifer's hiring her replacement.
Apparently, yes.
Yeah.
Well, they changed the job title, actually, so I'm not 100%
well,
sure.
Well, yeah, I think there's going to be some other changes.
Nobody explains things to me.
Well, yeah, some of those things that, you know, that's always the problem when you don't communicate enough. Well, there's always that question, especially in HR, how much can you communicate?
Yeah.
And if you communicate too soon and you just let people know that you're thinking about something, unfortunately people take that and run with it, and then when you end up not doing that, they're disappointed. You said you were going to. Well, no, we said we were thinking about it. So that's a management struggle in terms of communications, is how much of your thinking do you actually share? And in some organizations in the private sector, you've got to be really, really careful what you say publicly, especially if it's a publicly funded through stock. You've got to be careful you don't mess up the stock market and that kind of thing. So the public sector, that's less of a problem, but there's still the expectations that need to be managed. So that line between properly communicating versus overly communicating or being too stingy with the communications is, I found to be the toughest thing to deal with. I tend to be very open. I communicate, I think, more probably sometimes, I'm told, than I should. I think that's a good thing, but not everybody does.
Yeah, for an HR manager, that's probably not a bad idea.
Well, there are times I probably should have kept my mouth shut, but that was my style.
Yeah. Okay, well, any final thoughts on your time at the library?
It was great. I have I've always been a user of the library, a customer of the library. As a teenager, I got my first library card at what is now the North Independence Branch when it was up a couple of blocks off the Independence Square. I guess it was in junior high when I got my first card. Liked to go up and hang up at the library after school because that's where a lot of the girls went. And so that was a good place to socialize, I guess, with the girls. at school. And junior high is about where you started in those days thinking mm-hmm. about girls more than you thought about baseball or those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. So I've had a long association with the library district, and it just made me realize how great libraries are and how fundamental they are to our democracy. Mm-hmm. I always believe that, and I have come to just believe it that much more, that the libraries need to stay here, they need to be here, they need to change, obviously, to stay relevant, as Steve mm-hmm. would say, but absolutely a cornerstone of democracy.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.